they're both psychologists, live in West Allenhurst, New Jersey. And he's head of counseling at Monmouth College. Mm-hmm. And Barbara is psychologist for the Neptune, New Jersey school system. They have two children. And Bruce is a senior resident in psychiatry at the Boston University Connected Hospital. Mm-hmm. And he and Alice live in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And Alice teaches English junior high.
Mm-hmm. Did they have children?
No.
Russell has a PhD.
Yeah.
And
so does his wife.
And Bruce's MD. Yeah.
She's a teacher. She teaches. Alice teaches.
No, is she?
She's the high school English teacher.
Oh.
We call Alice a master, because she got her master's in teaching, and then she went for another master's, and I thought that was very funny. I said, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. She said, now I'm going to be a master in English literature, and she got it.
Tell me, are their lives very different in... the lifestyle is very different, let's face that, with it. But I mean, are there interests, can you see commonality of interest, community-minded, like you and your husband are? Do you see, what do you think of your children?
Vast differences. Mm-hmm. Steve is interested but has not attached himself. He's interested in everything, mm-hmm. and has attached himself to nothing mm-hmm. special. Mm-hmm. I blame part of that, and this is where it's almost like a vindictiveness. I will not interfere. Mm-hmm. I am positive if the community had gone after him or any organization had, mm-hmm. which is the way most people get in,
yes.
he'd have been involved. Ida belongs to B'nai B'rith Women, and I don't know, she belongs to a few other things, and she's interested. Of course, she's been working. Mm-hmm. What will be now, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Russell and Barbara are very involved. They're involved in the temple, mm-hmm. and they're involved in B'nai B'rith, mm-hmm. and they get involved in everything. They run marriage encounter courses, mm-hmm. and things of that sort. Mm-hmm. They love that kind of mm-hmm. thing. Alice and Bruce are not involved at all for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. He's a young doctor. He's
yeah.
never had any time.
Mm-hmm.
And Alice is teaching, and her schedule is wild because of his schedule,
mm-hmm.
and his being alone a lot and so forth. But what they will do in the future, that's hard. I can't really... I don't really know which way they're going to go as far as community. It's too early to say. I think Russell and Barbara will always be involved because they're the kind that want to be with people, gather people onto them. Steve and I think, will be involved if the right things happen. But that's something I see in the Jewish community,
mm-hmm.
and I'm very angry about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know that session on WQED, I should have been among the angry people,
oh,
but
yes,
the subject
yes,
matter
yes.
would have been different.
Mm-hmm.
I have feelings about the way the Jewish community has gone. The Jewish community has become the Federation. But I don't think the Federation includes the masses of the Jewish community. And how people are selected and involved. I don't know whether I ought to put it on tape. I don't want it in the book.
It's up to you, but I think it does
yes.
reflect a part of, you know, of what makes it a Jewish community.
Let
you
me, can I make one statement that I don't want in the book,
okay.
and then the rest you'll understand?
All right.
Yeah, right.
Let me tell you what my real concern is.
Yeah.
I've watched a Jewish community through many years, and I can get very emotional about it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think being a person with a fine mind, a person with Jewish commitment, or dedication and concern matters. I think that affluence has taken over, and we're now the people of the buck, not the people of the book. And if you have enough money, you can be a leader in anything. And if you haven't enough money, you may have a great deal to give. And you can't make it. Now, of course, part of it I understand. Organizations today are all in financial trouble because you have to raise so much more every year just to stand still, and perhaps they'd like to subsidize certain things for leaders and so on, and they can't. But the overriding thing that troubles me, it's a very deep concern, is what happens with the next generation of young people. First of all, I don't find them committed in the same way that the old-timers were. My mother took joy out of dropping a couple of pennies in the pushkey on Friday night. She couldn't do anything else, and that was her commitment. I don't see our young people willing to give the time and the energy that you should give. But I think they're wonderful. I have great faith in the next generation. I think they're wonderful, and we should utilize them. But then I have to say to myself, who will be chosen? Will it be someone whose affluence has allowed him to take that position? Mm-hmm. Is the person being picked to head that drive and to do that thing the person that we know has the intellectual ability and the Jewish commitment? Or is it the person that is able, fortunately, to write the largest check? Mm-hmm. And this is the big change I've seen. I have loved B'nai B'rith women. That's perhaps the one thing I should have said to you when I talked about why B'nai B'rith women. I've loved it through the years because one of its features is that this was a place where any Jewish man or woman who wanted to do something for the Jewish community, who may not have been able to write a big check, but wanted to give of himself and give a little bit financially as he could find a place. And that's one of the things that I've always loved about it. But I never had the kind of concern that I have now that it has moved all the way to the other extreme. I don't mean, now I'm not speaking of an organization, all Jewish organization life has moved in that direction. And I have lived long enough to see a person, and I'm sure you both have, whose name means nothing to you because you've never seen it identified in any organization in the community, become a leader of a drive in the community, a major drive. And you recognize the reason. The reason is because of the person's ability to give. Now, I respect that. Where would we be without these people? It's a magnificent thing. But should that be the only qualification for leadership? In some cases, I'm sorry to say, I'm seeing it, and I'm sad. Because I don't know who the people are that we're cutting out. Mm-hmm. And that bothers me. Mm-hmm. You know, a young man today can be just an average young man, bright, dedicated, and so forth, but without any money. He could be tomorrow's millionaire, and I've already run into some of these who are bitter, because nobody wants them before. Mm-hmm. They're not willing. I think you can tell from the way I'm speaking, it bothers me terribly. I mean, it's something that's on the rise, and I think it's very dangerous for us as a Jewish community. There was a day when the Jewish intellectual was revered and respected. I don't know that it's the same kind of day.
Have you discussed it with the people you're associated with, other places?
Yeah, I make several speeches about it in every last meeting. Yes, it's right down the line. It is.
In every community.
It is not unique.
What about the Jewish religious community in this? What role do they play? You know, I just happen to think of our Jewish synagogue. Natalie's mine. What role does it...
I think what you see in the general Jewish community, you usually see in that level too.
The formal religious life.
I think it's quite true of our temple.
Mm-hmm. Are you both with Rhode of Shoah?
I'm from Rhode of Shoah.
I'm from Temple Emmanuel.
Yeah. And we were founders of Sinai. We started at the beginning, 1298.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, that was beautiful. Oh, what a nice part of our lives. Yeah. I was expecting my third child, and Steve was just a very, very little boy. And we had for a couple of years had a growing concern. We didn't want to just go to services. We wanted to belong to something. Mm-hmm. But we wanted to belong something to something that was meaningful. Mm-hmm. Now, my husband can read the prayer book. Mm-hmm. Can't translate because they weren't taught that in those days. And so he's very adept compared to me. I know no Hebrew whatsoever, and I wanted something that was more meaningful. And just at that time, we heard about Rabbi Levinson being in town and the possible organization of a Reformed temple.
Where did you belong at that time?
We didn't belong. We weren't affiliated. We used to go to services. you know, once mm-hmm. a year. And we had, from time to time, been at Beth Sholem and B'nai Israel and Rhodef Sholem and mm-hmm. the whole bit. And I don't recall who alerted us to it, but we heard about this this meeting, organizational meeting, and I must have been pregnant with Bruce at the time, I think. And maybe it was in the early months, and I wasn't well. I know that I didn't go. I wasn't well enough to go, but Nate went. And as he went out the door, I said, remember, find out about bar mitzvahs. They're not going to have bar mitzvahs. That's not for us. And he went, and he asked the question that night, mm-hmm. and there were some people there that night from another congregation that flipped their lids over it when the answer was yes. Yes, because Rhodef Sholem brought us into being, and many of the people were there, and they were never have made it without mm-hmm. them. They were great. And so we identified mm-hmm. with Sinai at that point, and Steve mm-hmm. started the religious school. We were so involved. It seems to me that we went for 15 years almost living at that temple. We went through the stages of the church. Bruce was named at one of the churches. Mm-hmm. And the fundraising. I was a co-chairman of the one of the, I think, the first bazaar they had. You know, I still hurt when I think of how hard I worked. Oh, my.
Physically hurt.
Oh, but it was beautiful because I remember it was in the Y, and the day we were setting up, people were walking in saying, my name is so-and-so, I'm a member of Sinai, can I help? Mm-hmm. You know, you don't hear that anymore, mm-hmm. but that's the way Sinai was mm-hmm. at the beginning. It was so beautiful. Mm-hmm. People just wanted to help. It was very exciting. Mm-hmm. And there, too, I became president out of nothing. Mm-hmm. I had no experience with a sisterhood mm-hmm. or a synagogue.
How did that dovetail in time? With your presidency of B'nai B'rith?
I had just come out of the presidency of the council, I believe. I'm pretty sure.
So you're on your way to district.
Yeah, I was still very active. I was what they called in those years a deputy. We call it now a consultant. And in those years, that meant I was servicing three chapters here. Once a month. At least once a month. And when I took the... I was never a vice. Was I a vice president of Sinai? I can't remember. I don't think I was. Maybe I was. Mm-hmm. But I had, as I say, I had no experience whatsoever. And when I became the president of Temple Sinai Sisterhood, none in that area. And I served for 2 years, and they were two very good years, and I loved it.
That was in the early history of
yeah.
Sinai.
Yeah. I was the.
When was it first started? It was after the war, wasn't it?
Wait a minute. We're 30 years old.
About 1950, wasn't
it? Mm-hmm. 47, like that. If it's
you'll notice that
old.
Dates don't stay with me. Yeah. I don't have a terrible time. I refuse to try to remember them. It's 30 years because mm-hmm. Bruce is 29 and I was mm-hmm. pregnant with Bruce. I must tell you it was a family thing because Nate was also involved. Nate was the secretary of the congregation. And then he became a vice president of the congregation, and he was the guy that found them their first cemetery. And there were so many delicious experiences mm-hmm. through those years at the beginning that were just beautiful. And of course, the children were involved, and we were all involved fully because I took the position that the children could not stay home from school on a holiday unless they went to services, mm-hmm. and I went with them. Mm-hmm. And now sometime four or five years we get to services very rarely, and people say, how come? I said, we're just plain tired, and mm-hmm. frankly, when we're home Friday night, I confess that I don't want to go out. Mm-hmm. I'm tired. I've been traveling so much. Mm-hmm. But it was wonderful. Just wonderful.
With all of your activities, and I could have just wondered why you couldn't do it, were you involved in any other, in any non-Jewish, in non-sectarian activities at all?
PTA, I wasn't. Nate was helped organize Kiwanis and Squirrel Hill. Mm-hmm. No, until we moved here, mm-hmm. where we got involved in the Belfield Area Citizens Association.
Oh, yes.
So we've been going to that, mm-hmm. and Nate was on the board, and they mm-hmm. have wanted me to do a lot of things, but I finally learned to say no. I want to be a part of it, and I don't want to just sit by, but I'm more and more reluctant to take on the active role, because I think it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
I say to B'nai B'rith, to Temple, all the time, when you have to reach out for a woman like me at this point, it's an indication that you're weak, you're sick. You shouldn't have to come back to me. In other words, if in all these years you have not developed other leaders, all you're doing is you're taking a temporary expedient. All right, so I'll say yes. What's it going to do for you next year, mm-hmm. the year after? And so I keep trying very hard to say no. I don't get to my chapter more than a couple of times a year. I try to get to the council three or four times a year. They know they can call me to troubleshoot or to go out to speak here. Mm-hmm. To groups or leadership sessions I'll conduct and so forth, but other than that I try to keep hands off. And that's the reason why, whether it's Council of Jewish Women or Hadassah or anything else, I've simply been a member. I'm going to be very candid with you. I've had occasion, I've been on the personnel committee on a national level, and I've been on nominating committees, and I've seen bios. And I don't know how you ladies feel, but I believe with all my heart and soul that when I read a bio and I see that a woman is physically active in seven organizations, that's a lie. You can't. Mm-hmm. You just can't. It's just on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you can. You can't work on my level and do the other things too. You just can't.
I was going to ask, how do you unwind?
I do a lot of needlepoint. No longer for me, because I have no place else to put it. But there, even one of my neighbors downstairs that I met just in this building, never knew her before, mm-hmm. has two gorgeous pieces of furniture upholstered with my needlepoint. I'll do needlepoint for anybody. All my children have needlepoint. That's the needlepoint I'm working on now for the children.
Mm-hmm.
And for a long period of time, I wasn't doing needlepoint. I was embroidering tablecloths. So everybody in the world, you know, everybody's going to remember when I'm dead. Everybody's got a piece of my work.
You
reach a point, how much can you make? But somewhere along the line, and I cannot date it, I never used to do any of this. I began it with a piece of needlepoint many years ago. And I have never been without. I have lost the ability to sit, other than when I'm reading, to watch TV or anything with my hands not busy. I'm always sewing. Always. That's how I am. And I am blind sometimes by just doing nothing, reading, you know. I can't tell you how much I treasure. I can get lonely fast, and I don't like being inactive for long periods of time. I get very edgy. But I really like just being alone and not having obligations, not having to meet deadlines. And I hate writing speeches. Mostly I don't write. I write notes. I do most of my work extemporaneously. And to me, that's the greatest challenge, that I have finally. Somebody said to me the other day, I've known you for 30 years, and it's the first time you ever admitted you've become a fascinating speaker. Because I said to her, you know, I think I finally became a good speaker. But the true story of Lil Holstein is what was described by someone who knows me intimately, that I may deliver the finest speech in the world tonight. Tomorrow morning, if you ask me to give a speech to somebody else, I'm going to be scared to death. I have no carryover in security. But I have learned that apparently I'm an effective speaker. I can't tell you why. I'm not entirely sure. Mm-hmm. But apparently it works. But the
it works. I've heard you.
Yeah. And I like it. I like it. And I still call. Now, that's how, other than meetings, which I don't have as many of, when I get away from town, it's usually because I've been called to come to some other city to speak.
With all of your traveling, do you still have any interest in traveling with your husband?
That's the best part.
That is
tell. Yeah. Actually, I had hoped when I became the president that he would travel with me sometimes, and he never wanted to, and I couldn't push him because I agreed with him. But fun is there for a man to just hang around while you're busy, so that when we plan our trips, it's separate and apart from anything else. And so we went to Israel and Europe that way. And we've gone to, we made a second European trip that way, and we've been to Spain, and the last last couple of years, we hadn't been to Florida, and I can't remember back to when, the last couple of years, we've gone down to Florida for a few weeks, and because my husband is a very busy man, I don't think he's ever going to retire, and please God, let him stay well and keep working. He still thinks he has to go down there and practice law and support three boys and send them to college. He can't, see, he spent more time doing that than not, so he forgets sometimes that all the boys are gone, and it's good, but he has a purpose. That's the thing I watch in Florida that frightens me. People who are working so hard at keeping busy.
And having a good time.
I don't like that. And we're very lonely now because almost all of our friends have moved to Florida. Very few of our intimate friends live here. It makes it hard.
When you were international president, about how much time did you spend traveling?
I would say that I traveled every month a minimum of one time, sometimes four and five times. The most trips were brief. You know, they would be 2 days, 3 days. Every once in a while, though, as international president, I would have meetings back to back, and I'd be gone for 7 days, 8 days. The only time it was longer than that is if I went overseas, went to Israel, particularly. But it was hard because I was always on the go.
With your trips to Israel, have they changed much? I mean, your feeling when you go there?
Well, I find Israel very stimulating. It's very exciting. The last time or two, I would say that it was a little, it was different. Now, I've seen the growth because I've been there seven or eight times.
This is what I asked.
But other than that, you know, you constantly see the growth and development. It's amazing. It's just, it's almost overgrown in some places. I hate to see Jerusalem that overbuilt. But the biggest thing changed for me, it's been the last time or two, and I've been a little more depressed. Because I have good friends there, and they're struggling, and they're frightened. My good friend Esther Herskovitz was the one I was talking about that went with her husband, Yaakov, to the front. Esther is alive only by the grace of God. She was in Bergen-Belsen, the concentration camp where that doctor was performing the experiment. She was 16 years old, and how she escaped is a miracle. And they, when the Allied forces were moving closer, they moved them to another concentration camp. And actually, she was so emaciated that she was thrown on a pile of bodies. They thought she was dead. The only reason she's alive today is because they were bombing close by, and the bodies slipped, and someone noticed that she was alive. And she met a man who, she had lost everybody. She met this man, young man who had been married and had a family, had lost everybody, and they only met each other. So they married, and eventually they got to Israel, and they have two lovely grown sons and a grandchild and a beautiful family. And she is, when you sit and talk to a woman like that, she's beautiful, and the smile and so forth, you think, how can she smile? How can she ever be a whole human being? But she is. But you see, the last time or two I've been depressed because she said to me, I prayed there wouldn't be any war so that my two soldier sons wouldn't have to go. She said, now I have to pray for my grandson. And you feel, the first time I've ever had that feeling of, or maybe it was the lack of excitement and hope, rather a feeling of depression and sadness when I came back. But they're wonderful people. And Israel, have you ever been? Oh, it's fantastic, absolutely fantastic. Of all the places I've been, I've enjoyed them all. I say to my friends, if you're going to Israel, go to the other places first, because otherwise it's spoiled. And I just spoke to my neighbors who had been to Israel and then to parts of Europe. And they said, you were right, because after seeing, it's not only seeing Israel, it's the way you see Israel and the way the tour guides are Bible scholars and political scientists, and you see everything in depth and you learn. Then you go to another, say to Italy, and the guides just show you around. There's a vast contrast. But B'nai B'rith women really gave me an opportunity for wonderful things, visiting with.
Tell us about meeting Golda Meir.
She is such a magnificent lady. You know, I recall that when I sat, it was really a joy. I had the opportunity to meet with her privately, to talk to her about our B'nai B'rith Women's Children's Home, and she knew all about it. And she, these boys are emotionally disturbed. They're the most seriously disturbed cases that we get. And she started to cry when she talked about what B'nai B'rith Women is doing, because she said, not only are you restoring them to health, but these are the men we have to depend on in case of trouble. But as you looked at her, you had the feeling of sadness. Here is a worn, old, sick woman, looking like she's carrying the whole world on her shoulders. And she opens up her mouth, and a 16-year-old comes through. And that spirit, and, you know, she's one gal who can get up and speak extemporaneously for 1 hour, and nobody moves. She's fascinating. Without a single note, she's magnificent. She's a marvelous, marvelous lady. And she really is a sick old lady. You just look at her and you say, Nebuch, those poor feet, her legs are swollen, and her face is lined. And Ben-Gurion was fascinating. We saw him at the point where he was already not well. And they cautioned us that, you know, he tends to forget. We were in his study, lined with books, and he came in. He wanted to know who it was, B'nai B'rith, B'nai B'rith Women. He looked around, he noticed I was there and another woman. And he looked at me and he said, where are all the women? And gave me a long lecture about how women are the strength of the family. And that it's the women you depend on because they raise the children. And that's the future of Judaism. Mm-hmm. And it was fascinating to watch his mind. You know, while he'd forget, and he'd have that flash and this brilliant mind would come through. And you're almost startled, you know, to hear these things from him. It was a very exciting experience because he died not too long afterwards. But that sharpness was, and he was still writing at that point. Very interesting.
And I noticed your picture in the hallway with President Ford. Was that while he was president?
He was vice president. And my sons say that's a picture of mother telling Jerry Ford what it's like to be president.
I have to see that. That's marvelous.
Yeah, and that was interesting, and Kissinger, whom I met recently, but we talked to him only very briefly. I thought he was a very patient, understanding man, because when he came into the room, it was a VIP room, but it was a big one. The head table was big, and so forth, so there were a lot of people, and they literally surrounded him. Mm-hmm. I'd have lost patience finally, but he was still smiling and being very patient and gracious, yeah. And Dr. Heschel, Abraham Heschel, was another delightful, delightful man. Brilliant, just brilliant. And many of the senators and congressmen and the dignitaries overseas. And I was on radio in Israel once and broadcast once or twice. And that's funny. They're telling you what to do and you panic for a minute and you say, well, you know that I'm going to speak in English. Yes, we know. But, you know, as you're getting ready to go on and there's Hebrew all around you, you think, you know, they're going to pull something. Radio programs are fascinating. I was in some city in the Midwest where I went on a program. They didn't tell me that this program I was on, see, the women, I came to work with them in leadership sessions and speak. And naturally, they want to get you as much coverage as possible, so they grab for programs. But they didn't tell me this was one of these call-in programs that they stuck on.
Oh, yes.
And I had a couple of bigots call in and let me have it, I want to tell you. And it was fascinating. He said, I handled it well. I said to him, thanks a lot. The least you could have done was to tell me. I was totally unprepared.
You know, you've been so active nationally and internationally. What are your feelings about Pittsburgh at the present time? I think you perhaps look at Pittsburgh a little more objectively than we who are so bound up in Pittsburgh and our horizons aren't as wide as yours.
I do find this, that it's almost like there's two sides of my life. There's the woman that is very involved and shakes hands with Kissinger and Golda Meir and so forth.
Yes.
Then there's woman who comes home here and see, fortunately, I didn't always think so. I know now, fortunately, my family low-keys it. You know, they may tell others, but with me, it's very ordinary. And while sometimes it may irk me down deep, My common sense tells me this is very good, because you can't live a life up there with your family. You just can't. Mm-hmm. But we are great talkers around mm-hmm. the table when the boys were all home. The dining room table was our forum. Mm-hmm. And they tell me I never let them get a word in edgewise, and I tell them that was four against.